Hi, we are the ASM Behind the Scenes podcast. My name is Jin Yao.
I'm Ximena.
And I'm Sergio. We're three seniors at ASM.
In this podcast, we will explore the lives of upper school staff members and alumni with the hopes of bringing you fun stories about high school, college, and life in general.
We'll be releasing an episode every week on Fridays.
If you have any cool ideas for future episodes, feel free to email s23142@asmadrid.es. But before further ado, let's get into it.
What's up, guys? Today we have Mr. Livers, who is a social studies teacher here at ASM. Thank you so much for coming today.
Hey, how's it going?
Could you first introduce yourself a bit and what classes you teach and all that?
Sure. My name is Xander Livers. I'm from South Carolina, Columbia, South Carolina. Moved to New York, then Hong Kong, and now I'm in Madrid. I teach integrated social studies for grade 9 and integrated social studies for grade 10. Back when I taught some of y'all in here, it was world history for grade 9 and U.S. history for grade 10. So things have changed quite a bit.
Okay, so our first question is, what would you say is like your best high school or college memory?
My best high school or college memory? Oh, well, that's hard. You want one of both?
Whichever one you think is better, if you like college more or if you like history more.
We'll take one of both.
Okay, because high school, okay. I mean... High school, you have to go through high school. In college, like, you wish you could do it again, I'd say. So I think high school, my favorite memory is, like, starting a band with finding my people in high school and then starting a band and kind of feeling way more independent in 11th and 12th grade than I had in 9th and 10th grade. And there was a correlation between, like, my grades and my commitment to class and kind of finding out who I was. So 9th and 10th grade, I was just kind of whatever, and my grades were pretty bad. My mom made me retake Algebra 2 because I got a D in it in 9th grade, and I think I got a C the second time I took it. So there's improvement, growth mindset, hashtag growth mindset. And then I think 11th and 12th grade, I realized, like, oh, I'm good at, I mean, again, like, everybody can be good at anything, but I gravitate towards literature and history, and those are the classes that I got accolades in and got called out, and I had a model paper for AP history, and I was like, oh my god, that's great. But then I also, like, met kind of my, like, lifelong friends 11th to 12th grade and started playing music with them and stuff. So that was really fun. Got to be creative in that way. And then college, went to College of Charleston and met, like, you know, friends for life, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And, met my best friend. Again, started a band with him. Studied abroad in England and started to visit other friends studying abroad. So that's all very general. But yeah. Those are key things that I keep with me, and I'm still really good friends with all my college friends. Like, mm-hmm. I would say most people are.
Yeah.
And I have like two really good high school friends. Like,
yeah.
Two, maybe three really stuck around. But college friends, I think it's a cliche to say, but that's kind of where you meet your lifelong friends. Wow. Sorry to say that. Y'all won't talk to each other ever again after this.
Yeah, we won't, actually. But so you kind of mentioned how you had like a band, and that sounds really cool. How did you think... Was it hard to, like, balance between the band and school, or did you focus more on band and then...
No, because when I look at y'all, I'm, like, so in awe of you, because I had zero ambition, like, at all. You know what I mean? Like, it came naturally because I like history, I like reading, and I like literature, so it's, like, it just kind of, like, oh, I like this anyways, why not do well at it, you know? Yeah. Like, when I met my girlfriend in college, who eventually became my wife, like, she... Oh. Took calculus, and it's like it was the hardest thing, and she had to really, like, because she was a perfectionist and she had to, like, work really hard to get that A, whereas, like, I'm fine if I get a little B in that, like, whatever. But yeah, I've definitely put pleasure before business in high school, and then, you know, later on, like, right now I'm doing what I love, which is teaching, and it just kind of goes hand in hand because I feel like I have a lot of control in the class and I can make the classes my own. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't like, oh, how do I balance being a great student in this? Mm-hmm. I think you've probably heard from other teachers and administrators that, like, no, I did what I cared about. Yeah. I think Mr. Bolster told the story about, like, how he cared about rugby and stuff. Yeah. And, you know, school just was incidental if he did well. And that was the same with me. So it wasn't really hard balancing things. I think college, I cared more about my, like, grades and reputation. I was like, oh, this is permanent. Mm-hmm. And I did pretty well, you know, got a B every now and then, but mostly an A student. But, like, that's because I got to choose the classes I took. Mm-hmm. I went to a liberal arts, like, you know, college, so I did have to take a few math classes. So I took stats, right? That's, like, the most, like, humanities-friendly math, you know, and I did okay in it, right? It was it wasn't hard balancing those because I just didn't choose to balance them. It just kind of happened
naturally. So what degree did you choose in the college?
So I majored in double majored in history and secondary education.
Wow.
So that means after 4 years I could officially teach.
Yeah.
I don't think I was a good teacher because of that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of people question that. Like, after 4 years, oh, you double majored in secondary education, you can teach now. Like, I then moved to New York after doing student teaching, which was very challenging, like always. And I moved to New York, and then I had my first year teaching, which was, you know, I can't curse on this, but it was an S show, a dumpster fire, whatever you call it, whatever the Gen Z calls it. But as it should be, everybody's first year is hard and awful. But I also went to Queens College, then I got my master's, and I was kind of learning things that I could apply in the classroom and becoming better. So I was like, oh, okay, like, you know, education about education or pedagogical education is actually very helpful if applicable and hands-on.
Mm-hmm. And what happened with the band?
The band?
After high school, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was thinking about it. Like, I was never that serious. I just like to write kind of silly, sloppy indie rock songs. But the drummer of the band, Andy Woodward, he went on to be in a really big band called Toro y Moi. They were on Ellen a few years ago.
Oh,
wow. But yeah, I mean, they're well known. Like, they're opening. Do you know Steve Lacy?
Yeah.
They're opening for Steve Lacy right now in the States, right? That's and their sound is very similar. Blood Orange, they're friends with them. Tyler, the Creator, friends with them, that kind of thing.
Wow.
But I was just really good friends with the drummer, and I knew the lead singer, Chaz, who's like the guy. And I had a radio show in college with the bass player, Patrick. But that was kind of cool. And then my college band, my good friend, Brett Nash, the drummer, he's now the guitar player for Band of Horses, which you might have heard of, might not have, but they're a big indie rock band.
Yeah.
So I'm close to greatness, but that was never for me. I bet you talked to Mr. Dempsey. He was in a touring band as well.
That's so cool. Yeah. It's kind of something common, like, in the school. I don't know. People do bands. Before, you kind of mentioned how you, like, it was interesting how you mentioned how when you graduated from college, teaching was really hard, and I think that it kind of connects to the point that a lot of times experience teaches you a lot more than just simple college, and I think that's what a lot of people are thinking right now. Like, when they're applying to college, they're like, okay, like, I'm going to apply to college, but a lot of times, like, life experiences or being put into the natural setting teaches you a lot more than sitting in a classroom listening to lectures. Like, I think that kind of connects a lot to, I think, like, the seniors who want to go to college and are wondering, should I go to college or should I just maybe learn from my experience and place myself in a natural environment and see how I learn from that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that means that implies failure, right? You have to fail too, and that's okay, right? Which, I mean, it's sad because no matter what, everyone's had a first year teacher, and if you're a teacher, you're a first year teacher sometimes, so you kind of feel bad for that cohort that has to watch you be a first year teacher. Hopefully there's like a story arc there, like you watch in any sports movie where it's like, oh, okay, finally the coach gets it together at the end and everybody wins, you know. So I feel like my first year was like that, like just complete disaster first semester. By the end of the semester, like second semester, the kids, you know, at least liked me, they understood my class, and I kind of found my voice as a teacher. So I think a lot of people have that story, but it still doesn't get easier second year, sometimes even harder than your first, like the sophomore slump and that kind of thing. But no, I mean, I think that's a good point you make, because a lot of people now with like YouTube and DIY, like maybe I could just learn a trade.
Yeah.
I mean, if money is your goal, you could easily, you know, instead of going to Harvard for a philosophy degree, you could learn a trade and make more money at the same time. If you like ideas and you want to learn about philosophy from, you know, at Cambridge, like maybe you should do that as well.
Yeah.
I personally love the college experience. I realize I'm very privileged to say that. I mean, I had some scholarships, but still, like, I had my grandma saved a bit of money for me to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
In Europe here, that might be like completely foreign, the idea that you have to like spend tons of money on college and be in student debt for college. But in the US, it's not foreign at all. That's the main way to do it. So I just love the college experience. I think it's great. But I say that with reservations, knowing that, you know, not everybody can easily do that.
Yeah. And you kind of mentioned after college how you, the first and second year was kind of bad. But what did you do after? Like, what was your first job and, like, where, I guess?
Sure. So my first real job was substitute teaching right after I got my teacher degree and graduated. So I had a semester, because I stayed on an extra semester to do student teaching. So it's kind of my fifth year, I guess. I substitute taught for a month, but then I got a job working with a student who was autistic and was emotionally disturbed. So I was what's called a paraprofessional. Mm-hmm. So it's just like me in the class supporting this one student mm-hmm. in elementary school. So it's an elementary school setting. And then going back to ambition, I'll circle back to that in a second. Like, I didn't really have any ambition other than I wanted to move to New York City. Like, me and my best friends, Taylor and McKenna, I wanted to move with them to New York City. That was the plan, to move to New York. So we did that. We moved to Brooklyn in June. And then I got a job at a charter school in Brooklyn, another elementary school, doing a paraprofessional job again. Mm-hmm. So again, lower school, third grader. Yeah. And that was a very easy job, but I got paid, you know, $13 an hour. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my rent was $700 or $800 a month. So you can do the math. It was very tight and hard. So then the next year I got a job working in the office of that school. So doing a Blanca or a Carolina position because they're like, oh, we need somebody. And I think I say I'm not ambitious, but like whenever I do a job, I want to do a good job at it. So I think people saw me kind of like, you know, working really hard. So they're like, oh, you can work in the office now, which was nice because I had a salary. It felt like a flipping king. I felt like I had more money than I'd ever like seen before. Even though if you saw it, you'd be like, what? You were excited about that. And then it was after 2 years of that, I was like, I want to teach. I do not like office work. And then I finally found a teaching job on Craigslist. It was a teaching job on Craigslist. It was an all-girls public school, project-based, standards-based. So, like, everything that I believe in now, I just happened to do this. Like, I could have gotten a job at that charter school I was that was way conservative, very traditional, like silent lunches. Yeah. You know, like seriously, like silent lunch. I mean, I think a lot of what they did at that school was child abuse now. But like, you know, like everything was about test accountability and all that kind of stuff. So at this super progressive school, it was completely opposite of that. So I'm so glad that was my first school because I drank the Kool-Aid, as my wife says, and I just started believing in standards-based grading and project-based grading and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, so I was 25 when I first like actually started teaching, which is kind of late. Some people start teaching like right at 21 or 22, you know, so it's a bit later. And that was 11, this is my 11th year, so that was 11 years ago.
Oh, would you say that now, after having taught for so long, like that you've found your ambition or you've grown into that ambition, so you now think, and if so, what is that ambition now? Like teaching or history?
Oh, no, for sure. I mean, I think I am very ambitious now that I feel like I'm good at something. I don't think I'm great at it, but I feel like I'm always trying to get better at it. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm not good with complacency. Mm-hmm. And my wife talks about it too, because like I just had a kid a few years ago, and then I started writing for fun. So I do all these things in my life. So I have a very regimented life right now. Like I wake up at 6, I run around Retiro, and then that's when I listen to music. And then on my ride here, I write creatively. And then I'm lesson planning all day and teaching lessons, and then I get home, I'm in dad mode, and then I fall asleep at 11. Like, and that's it. Yeah. So ambitious as in, like, I want to make sure I'm a good dad, good teacher, and then I, like, fill my cup or whatever in my way that makes me happy, whether it's playing music or writing or seeing movies or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think I'm ambitious in that way, whereas before, my own ambition was, like, I want to be where stuff is happening. Stuff is happening in New York. Mm-hmm. Like, and that was all I had going for me.
Yeah. Now we're going to move on to the surprise question.
Okay.
I think it's a fun question, I think.
So all right.
It's good.
So is history moving away from the study of great men to that of ordinary people? It's from Oxford Interview Questions. You can take your time.
Okay. That's a good question. It depends where you are geographically and where you are on the political spectrum. Like if you're in Florida right now, you know, a lot of people would say, whoa, we should only teach the history of great men, great white men, I'm saying they might say, because, you know, the whole College Board controversy, right, the idea of taking out African-American studies, right, like, for me, that's insane. So, I mean, I feel like a lot of places are reacting towards the idea that, you know, maybe we should be looking at everyday people. I mean, a classic text that y'all have read before, I think probably in my class if you've had me, or in Mr. Eddy's or Mr. Dillon's TOK class is People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn.
Yeah.
Didn't y'all do the map-making activity? Yeah. And it was they mainly used it for the map metaphor, right? Mm-hmm. About making a map and trying to generalize or simplify or take big ideas and to graph them somehow. But that text is revolutionary, that came out in 1979, 1980. It's a cliche at this point, but it was like a people's history of the United States. Mm-hmm. So it's looking at people from different lenses. So it's mainly looking at, like, you know, you could look at the African American struggle, the women's struggle, LGBTQ struggle, and like starting in the '60s. So that's like that text has like been used so many times. They talk about it in the TV show The Sopranos and Greta Gerwig's Lady Bird a few years ago. Timothée Chalamet is like reading it, you know, and smoking and being like whatever. But I think personally, I think it should be not about ordinary people, but about like not only about this, but more emphasis on social movements and people building movements together, and not just Napoleon, you know, like defeated the, you know, the, what am I trying to say? Sorry, you know what I'm saying? Like, what was the, sorry, I'm brain farting here, but Holy Roman Empire, right? Like Napoleon, like putting the nail in the coffin of the Holy Roman Empire, or this person doing that. I think it should be much more balanced of looking at how social movements and other people that aren't great men.
Yeah.
Because I do see the whole great men thing as not just. I mean, it's not only sexist. You can talk about Cleopatra or great women too.
Yeah.
But I feel like that is just a 19th century way of thinking.
Yeah.
That I'm hoping it's getting away from it. But also, you don't want to get to a point where it's so abstract or so not rooted in what actually happened that it's like it's not seen as like credible history anymore, or way a purposeful way to understand cause and effect in the past.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I mainly look at it in a political way because the College Board, you know, this last month, you know, in Florida, they said you can't teach African American studies anymore.
Yeah.
That's not a real course, right? So I see it as it depends on, you know, what your perspective is, and it's hard when we're like debating whether facts even happened, you know, instead of debating the cause and effects of those facts or different perspectives around them.
Mm-hmm. Wow, great answer.
That sounds very meandering. I can read you that.
It's good. Yeah. There were a lot of other questions. These were all past Oxford interview questions. So the reason why we do these surprise questions is because we want to kind of give you a glimpse into what we're going through right now. And kind of we thought it would be funny to see how teachers would respond to these questions that students are.
I thought you were gonna give me a logic problem. I was like,
No. These questions are meant to see, like, there's no right or wrong answer ever. It's just to see how you think and see your thinking process.
Well, it's good to do that because, like, we just had the in-house debate tournament on Saturday that Mr. Eddie put together, and it was excellent. But, like, I think it was a good example of how what y'all are asked to do, like, we often don't have to do that anymore as old people.
You're not old,
but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like watching students do the impromptu debate, like you have 10 seconds to choose a quote, 90 seconds to prepare a response, and then 3 minutes to deliver.
Yeah.
If you ask any teacher here to do that, they'd probably be like, no, thank you. So, I mean, it's true. And this kind of goes to like philosophy of grading too. Like, I shouldn't be asking you to do something I can't do myself.
Yeah.
Right? Because I talk with people about, like, oh, how should we grade? Should the mastery band, should that be something that is, like, only the top 1% of the 1% can get that? They have to really surprise me with a magical answer.
Yeah.
Or is it something I should be able to teach you to and scaffold it? You know, so, like, we have these discussions all the time, but I think we put a lot of pressure on y'all to be great and perfect all the time. And teachers, whenever put on the spot, are not great and perfect all the time. You know what I mean? So it's good that you're doing that.
Yeah.
All right. So going back to the questions about your life. You said that you've been teaching for 11 years. And why did you move to Madrid if you really liked New York and the big city?
Oh, good question. So I was in New York with my wife, or I guess she was my girlfriend at the time, but she was like not digging New York as much. You know, she liked it a lot, but it was very hard because she was an art history major, and every art history job was an internship, and an unpaid internship at that, and unlikely to lead to anything at that, right? Because you just had so many people that knew people, you know, and if you are living in New York and being unpaid for your labor, most likely, like, somebody supporting you, you know, and she didn't have anybody supporting her. She's like, there's no way I'm going to break into this field. Sadly, she got a job opportunity that was going to pay well for this Dumbo. You know what Dumbo is?
I mean, the elephant.
Not the elephant. it's an area in Brooklyn called down under the Manhattan Bridge overpass.
Oh, yeah.
If you ever watch Gossip Girl, that's where one of the galleries took place.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Penn Badgley. That's what it is.
I love him.
Oh, you do? Okay. I think that's... I watched some of it because I was in earshot of it, but that's where his gallery was. It's see, you've seen pictures and videos, I'm sure. Was that a picture of Dumbo?
Oh, no.
Oh, okay.
Our little secret communication.
I totally lost. Oh, so my wife's gonna take a job in Dumbo. That's gonna be awesome. But we are already like applied to work in Hong Kong because originally she was like, let's just go teach English in Korea or South Korea, you know. And I was like, sure, but I don't want to just teach English. Like, I want to do history. So I was like, maybe I can get a job at an international school. Mm-hmm. And it happened to be Hong Kong. That was a great experience for a few years. Oh, my dad wasn't doing too well. So I was like, can we get back like closer to the States? And, you know, so we put out a bunch of, you know, I've sent out like, tons of resumes. And it was going to be Switzerland, Macedonia, or Spain. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to go to Madrid. And it seems like Ms. Cullen hired me for the right reasons, or we had similar kind of philosophies, so...
Is that... It's closer to the U.S.? I mean, you could go either way, right?
Oh, you'd be from... Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, like, 7 or 8 hours to get to Charlotte,
yeah.
You know, which is an hour away from my home, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Charlotte, North Carolina, an hour away from Columbia and Greenville, which is where my wife's from. Mm-hmm. So that was part of it. We wanted to be closer to my dad. Mm-hmm. But I love Madrid. Like, I think we could easily stay here for a long time. I need to learn. Mm-hmm. I need to actually sit down and learn Spanish, though. It's embarrassing when I talk to my... Well, like, because I'll try my best. And like,
yeah.
Oh, no, you're good. Because, like, I can communicate basic ideas, but like, oh, it's fine. Like, how long have you been here? And I'm like, oh, in 5 years. And they're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like, are you sure you're a teacher? Are you sure you, you know?
Yeah.
Are you just making stuff up? Are you self-sufficient?
Yeah.
You've been here 5 years
yeah.
and you can't speak Spanish.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. But I think I'll be here for a long time. My son's going to be coming here next year, so that'll be exciting.
Wow.
Already?
Yeah, already. Yeah, was I teaching you whenever
yes.
he was? Yeah, yeah. So
it was in quarantine.
Yeah, yeah,
like
it was
right
in quarantine.
Before.
Yeah, I
wow.
made a flipped
oh, wow.
video on World War I,
yeah.
like for y'all.
Yeah,
and then 10 minutes after I finished it, I was like, I don't feel too good. And then 3 hours later, Ezra was out
no.
in the world,
and then
which is very fast labor.
In the other videos, you would hold him in the.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I had a great paternity leave.
Okay, so moving on to our last question, it's. Very broad, but what
mm-hmm.
advice would you give future or students?
Like,
yeah, any students
yeah.
that in our school or general students, based on your experience.
High school student.
Advice, I think. I mean, it's going to be cliche. I feel like every teacher is going to say this, but like you know, find your voice and don't give up too much of who you are. Just
mm-hmm.
because of status or money or this or that,
mm-hmm.
like, well, you know what I mean?
No, it's yeah.
You're the
it's
only
good.
One.
You're, yeah, no,
this,
no,
yeah.
the teachers.
Oh, really?
This.
I don't
yeah.
know. I feel like just like it's hard because right now y'all are figuring out what makes you happy,
mm-hmm.
and you're still gonna be doing that for the next 10 years of your
yeah.
life. But once you figure out kind of the realm of what makes you happy,
mm-hmm.
just try not to relegate that to just like maybe a hobby you take out every 3 months or
yeah.
4 months or
yeah.
only on vacation. Like, try to make that a central part of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, obviously I'm here because money is not my passion,
mm-hmm.
you know? And, like, I have friends at the school that talk about trading Bitcoin and following the market and this and that. I'm just like, I don't know what's going on. You know, like, I just...
yeah.
But yeah, but he's good at it. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, he
like, he's good at it and he likes it. And
yeah.
I'm entertained by the conversation. Well, actually, one of my best friends from high school, James, he apparently made like $60,000 in NFTs.
Oh wow.
And like
oh,
NFTs. And this is a guy, sorry, I don't want to call him out, but this is a guy that was dog walking before that. Like, you know, and like
yeah.
he was a house husband and he was like
yeah.
super happy house husband. He would dog walk sometimes before being a house husband. And he's like, yeah, I got it on the NFT game and made $60,000. I'm like, whoa, I would never
wow.
even risk that or think to risk
yeah.
that, you know? But I think, have y'all ever seen the film Step Brothers?
No.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, I don't know what the quote is exactly, but it's a really stupid quote. But I understand what he's saying. When Richard Jenkins, the dad at the end, is like, don't forget your dinosaur, or like, I always wanted to be a dinosaur.
Oh, yeah.
And then,
yeah.
like, obviously it's absurd. You can't be a dinosaur. But he's saying, like, you know, don't give up who you are. And I
yeah,
feel like quoting Step Brothers would be appropriate for me here. Like, you know, it's again, it's cliche, but whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you want to, like, balance it out, like, you know, if you're like, I'm good at this aspect and I can do it well, but I still want to, like, play music at night
mm-hmm.
or whatever, like do that. Have a balance,
yeah.
but don't let yourself become overcome with whatever ambition is going to not make you happy. Like, mm-hmm. be ambitious about the things that make you happy first and foremost.
Right. Don't give up your dreams, right?
Yeah, don't give
I
up your
that.
Dreams. Yeah. Don't give up your dinosaur. I didn't find the exact quote. I'll look it up in a second.
Okay, that's going to be
Thank
the
you.
Title.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Sure, sure. No, it's great.